Without further ado, let's give a warm EA welcome to Dr. Kate Landeck.
Well, hello. Thank you all for coming out tonight. It's such a beautiful evening, so much better than all the rain that we had earlier in the week. So I'm glad you're all here. Tonight, we're very fortunate to have a group of incredible World War II veterans, and I know you all understand how lucky we all are to have them here and to have them talking with us tonight. We're also joined by three historians, and I feel very fortunate about them. I'm going to introduce each of them, and they'll come out, and then I'll introduce the veterans. So first, we're going to have Matt Seelinger. He's the chief historian, and he's editor of On Point Journal, and with the Army Historical Foundation. Come on out, Matt. Next, we're happy to have Jeff Duford. He's the senior historian at the Air Force Research Laboratory and their history office. And finally, we have Ben Christie, who's the collections chief at the National Museum of the Marine Corps. And now that we have our historians out here, we're going to bring out our veterans one at a time. And we've got a really great diverse group of veterans who served in all different branches during World War II. These are all combat veterans, and we're really glad to have them here. First, we're going to invite Don McPherson on stage. Don was in the United States Navy. He served on the Essex. He flew F-6F-5 Hellcat. And if you go over to Warbirds this week, they've got the Hellcat over there is painted in Don's colors over in Warbirds. Don became an ace of flying over Iwo Jima. So thank you for being here, Don. Our next veteran we want to bring out tonight is one that you may have seen lately on the Super Bowl and at the presidential address. It's Brigadier General Charles McGee, Tuskegee Airman, flew P-39s, P-47s, P-51s. He flew in Korea in F-51s with the 18th Fighter Bomber Group. He also served in Vietnam. And commanded and flew reconnaissance phantoms in their photo reconnaissance. Colonel McGee, General McGee, please join us. Our next veteran, and I know you feel as good about this as I do, that we have a second Tuskegee Airman that is joining us tonight, Colonel George Hardy, who is a Tuskegee Airman out of Italy, flew P-51s, then went on to serve in Korea flying B-29s, and flew in Vietnam as well. Colonel Hardy, please join us. Next, we have Bob Kubiak. He was with the 449th Bomb Group. He flew B-24s in Italy during World War II. And we are very happy to have him join us today as well. Please come on out. Uh, Next, we have Wisconsin native Jack Krzyzewski. Jack is not a pilot, but we are very happy to have him. He was with the 553rd Anti-Aircraft Group, so he shot down the airplanes. He was at the Battle of the Bulge, and we're very happy to have him join us tonight. Good. And our final veteran tonight that we are also very pleased to have is John Luckadoo. Lucky flew B-17s in 1943 in Europe with the 100th Bomber Group. He finished flying his 25 missions in February of 1944. Lucky, come on out. Have this as a sort of conversation. We don't want to just have a going down the line so that we can have a chance to hear the stories that these men have for us. One of the things we want to do, though, is offer a little context. World War II was a long time ago, and we have some of the best historians on the topic here with us tonight as well. So we're going to let each of the historians talk a little bit about what their branch did in World War II, and then we'll move on to talk to the veterans. So Matt, do you mind telling us a little bit about what the Army did?
Sure thing. First of all, I'm so happy to be here. I've been reading about this event since I was little. And so I've been able to scratch this off my bucket list, and this is also the first time I've ever been to Wisconsin, so I can scratch it off too. But I'd like to talk about the U.S. Army, briefly about the U.S. Army in World War II. By the time the United States entered World War II in late 1941, the Army's strength was at 1,462,315. The reason why it was at least this high at that time was the draft had been instated in September 1940, and the National Guard had started being called up. To put this in perspective, the year before, the Army was at 269,023. By the time the war ended in 1945, the Army had 8,267,958. The Army participated in 38 campaigns in the Americas, North America, Italy, Western Europe, the Pacific, and Asia. And not to steal the Marines' thunder, the Army took part in more than 20 amphibious campaigns, amphibious operations. The casualties for the Army totaled 318,274 dead. This is including Army Air Forces. This is the Army Air Force. The Air Force was not an independent service in 1947. 291,557 of these were battle deaths. The total, to put this in perspective again, the total U.S. deaths in World War II was 405,399. So the largest number obviously came from the Army. The Army then suffered another 565,861 wounded.
Thank you for that rundown. And Ben, if you'd talk a little bit about the Marines and maybe touch on the Navy a little.
Certainly. I'll come off of Matt's discussion. I think it's important that as a country, as we draw down from two wars over the last 20 years where such a small percentage of the population partook, it's important to remember that World War II truly was an entire generational event that drew in the entirety of the nation. And I've got some sort of similar figures for the growth of the Navy and the Marine Corps, particularly on the aviation side. November 1941, there was a grand total of 2,150 Navy aircraft. Only 1,500 of them were first-line combat types. There were 7 carriers, only 9 wings, and roughly speaking, about 40 squadrons total. The Marine Corps was even much smaller. There were only There were only 9 squadrons entirely. By the end of the war, you've got 440,000 pilots alone. That's not other crew members, that's just pilots in the Navy. 110,000 Marines, 1,500 of them were Coast Guard. The Navy operated a total of 41,000 aircraft over the course of the war, 28,000 of which were combat types, and 10,000 of those in the Pacific. By the end of the war, there were 26 fast fleet carriers, 64 escort carriers, and these carried the war to the Japanese and the Germans throughout the war. Navy claimed a total of 6,400 victories, with losing 451 airplanes of their own to air-to-air losses. The Marine Corps added another 2,800 aerial victories with 446 air-to-air losses, and there were 120 Marine Corps aces. All told, naval aviation sunk 174 Japanese combat ships, and more importantly, one could argue, almost 500 Japanese merchant ships. Remember, the island of Japan in particular was completely dependent on the merchant shipping for their oil, foods, rubbers, all of the things needed to fight a war. And the loss of their merchant fleet probably shortened the war more so than just about anything else. Additionally, naval aviation sank 63 German U-boats and assisted with sinking 20 more. And one last two logistical stories, because oftentimes the logistical side of the naval war is lost. Particularly in the Pacific, where such large distances between bases, flying bullets and beans was absolutely vital to the prosecution of the war. And in August 1945 alone, just that month, the Naval Air Transport Service flew almost 40 million miles, carrying 11,000 tons of cargo, 85,000 passengers, and over almost 65,000 miles of air route. In total, in 1945, the Navy and the Marine Corps, which again, remember, 4 years earlier, had only 60 squadrons amongst both service branches. In 1945 alone, the two services flew almost 16 million flight hours. So give an example of how rapidly the expansion was.